Yes. Well, not exactly. He was a prolific inventor. Mr. Judson had patented dozens of useful ideas, which had found their way to practical, even popular applications. There were internal combustion engines, variable speed transmissions and clutches for automobiles, a pneumatically powered streetcar system, a ledger full of technological triumphs written in bold black ink, and yet one failure had continued to plague Mr. Judson throughout his otherwise profitable career as a mechanical innovator. It was an idea that nobody wanted. The invention that got away. The so-called clasp locker or unlocker for shoes. Anyway, that was its formal title on Mr. Judson's August 29, 1893, patent number 504038. Clasp locker or unlocker for shoes. And the device itself proved as unattractive as its name. The inventor exhibited at the Chicago World's Fair that same year with 21 million gawkers inundating the fairgrounds. The clasp locker or unlocker for shoes should have stimulated at least some interest, but yet, instead, the wide-eyed masses pressed elbow to elbow to see the world's first electric Ferris wheel or to tisk at the coochie-coochie sideshow of a provocative belly dancer named Little Egypt. And thus did Whitcomb Judson's latest invention succumb to its own utter unpretentiousness. Might as well forget it, friends advised. After all, even a great musician hits a clinker once in a while, but the more others tried to make Mr. Judson feel better, the worse he felt. The clasp locker or unlocker for shoes was a good idea, he insisted, and he would spend the remaining 16 years of his life trying to prove it. He thought up some new names, a whole slew of new names, including the Universal and the Security, spelled with a capital C, and the Placo. The Placo? Well, Mr. Judson was desperate. He was so eager to improve the design itself, along with the machinery used to mass produce it, and still after years of fretting and simplifying, the clasp locker or unlocker for shoes was sold with a formidable-looking page of elaborate instructions regarding its otherwise applications and its basic operation and the routine maintenance. And as I say, Mr. Judson died pretty much forgotten. And that's why the little you've heard here is practically all that anybody knows of him. For you see, when the world is ready for something, it's ready. You just can't keep folks away then, but until then, you can't even turn their heads. For once upon a time, a very successful inventor put his considerable imagination in gear and conceived a handy little something which he called the clasp locker or unlocker for shoes, but nobody paid any attention until many years after he died, when somebody else got hold of the little doodad and renamed it and remarketed it as the zipper. And now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that help you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guests are Paul Clark, Executive Director, and Jesslyn Blank, Membership and Social Media Manager of the San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau. We're going to be talking about the never-ending saga of the Paso Robles water basin.
Woo-hoo.
And I'm sure we'll get some calls on that one. So we're going to do that in the second segment, okay? So just hold those calls on the water basin, okay? We're going to talk about the proposed 1/2 cent slow cob sales tax, a ballot initiative that may be on the ballot in some form, and other tax issues that might be coming our way in the next election cycle. And then we'll talk about, well, first thing we're going to talk about are the benefits of Farm Bureau membership and upcoming events, because Jesslyn has to leave to go to a meeting. So Paul and Jesslyn, welcome back to PWM.
Barry, Thank you so much for having us. It's always fun.
Yes, thank you so much, Barry. We always enjoy stopping by and chatting.
It's always good to know what you guys are up to. Folks, you can call in with questions or text in with questions or comment, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Again, I'm doing an informal poll here of to see who stayed tuned in to Bad Bunny at the Super Bowl. Who switched to the TPUSA All-American halftime show, and who just went to the buffet line, okay? What did you guys? And I only have three votes, and it's totally split. I have one for Bad Bunny, one for TPUSA, and one for the buffet line. So,
well, you'll be shocked to know that I didn't even tune into the Super Bowl this year.
How come?
I didn't even turn it on.
Why?
I was out enjoying the sunshine.
You didn't care, right?
Nope, I was out enjoying the sunshine. I was out riding my horses.
I'm embarrassed to admit that my wife and I didn't watch it either. We don't have any access to it. We're not subscribed to anything that would show the Super Bowl, and we weren't that invested in it in the first place. So
yeah,
he was probably out checking cows. We were doing agriculture things.
I don't even know what or who Bad Bunny is.
Well, you didn't miss anything.
Okay.
And it was all in Spanish, so it was like...
That's okay in and of itself.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. You know, again, it's fine. Because if you understand it, that's fine, but it's... if you speak Spanish, it would have been fine, but it was an interesting halftime show. And I switched to the TPSUS, and I mean, they actually got a huge amount of people that shifted over from the game. They're saying close to 10 million viewers.
Wow.
Switched over to the All-American halftime. I think there was a lot of dissatisfaction with what the NFL has been doing with these halftime shows. Anyway, I know that Jesslyn's got some meetings she has to get to, so let's talk about membership. The two things I'd like to talk about, number one, and you can take them in any order you want, Jesslyn, is... How the Farm Bureau is doing with young people, getting them into the ag community, ag business, you know, mentoring them. Mm-hmm. And then, because again, with the way going to colleges today, I think young people are looking for alternatives. And secondly, talk about membership, because I know you're always looking for members for the Farm Bureau.
Yes, exactly. Well, for those that don't know what the Farm Bureau is, the Farm Bureau is a nonprofit organization here in San Luis Obispo, and we work to protect and promote agriculture throughout both North County and South County. So we work with those involved in the ag industry, those not involved in the ag industry who may want to learn more. And we also work with a lot of local businesses, both involved in ag and not involved in ag. So for us, membership is extremely important being a nonprofit organization. The Farm Bureau is a huge advocate for local farmers and ranchers on both a local level, a state level, and even a national level. So it's a pretty big deal here. Being a member, we have multiple levels of membership, starting with an associate membership, which is $125. That's for those who may not be directly involved with agriculture, but may want to learn more, and they're great advocates and supporters of ag. We have an agricultural membership, which is $330 a year. Those are for individuals who are directly connected in ag, maybe have a farm or a ranch or ag business. And then we also have a business support level, which is those both involved in ag and not involved in ag. It's $400 a year. This membership includes a lot of support on both ends. I think working with the business support members is one of my favorite things. I know Barry Blazin Bear Insurance is a great business support member, and we're excited to host you in the boardroom next week.
Yeah, we have that meeting. It's really a great facility.
Yeah, so it's super nice that we get to work with these business support members closely on a lot of advertising opportunities through our weekly e-newsletter that I send out on Mondays, through our website, and then also through our social media. So our business support members definitely get a little extra attention, I would say, but it's a great way for us to work together with different companies throughout San Luis Obispo County.
Well, and again, as long as you're giving me an opportunity to pitch this meeting, we're doing the Clear Path to Build a Business Worth Keeping or Selling with my colleagues Erica Scott, Jacob Rothman, and Jake Frederick next Thursday the 19th from 3 to 5 at the Farm Bureau offices and the conference room, and we're going to be talking about all kinds of things like accurate business valuation, strategic business roadmap, purpose-based financial plan, HR and compliance review, and partner integration. So we're looking forward to that. It's going to be our first, our maiden voyage, as it were. So that'll be, it'll be an interesting, it'll be great to see. And we have, and we have some, and we're filling up the room, so that's great.
And that's a great benefit for business support members, the opportunity to come and use our conference room. You can fit anywhere between 5 people, do I think 70, 75, depending on how the seating situation is. But yeah, that's a great benefit to our business support members, as long also add some extra marketing and stuff like that on the side that we can help with.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate that. So, and tell us a little bit about what, you know, the Farm Bureau is doing for young people to get, you know, you start pretty young with 4-H and future farmers and all that kind of stuff. But well, tell us a little bit about those programs. I know
Yes, for sure. I started when I think I was 9 years old in Creston 4-H. So 4-H and FFA holds a special place in both mine and Paul's hearts. Paul grew up showing livestock as well.
So it's super special to be in the position I'm at now with the Farm Bureau, because I think that Paul and I both give back a lot of our time to our local 4-H and FFA chapters.
There's so many great 4-H leaders throughout San Luis Obispo County, as you can see when you walk through.
The pens at the Mid-State Fair, you see all those dedicated kids who are not only going to school and doing their education, but they're also out working with their animals and raising these animals and coming up with these funds
to get them through college and everything else. Life gets expensive once you get older, and I think that 4-H and FFA is a great way to help those kids through the next chapters.
As far as we host at the 4-H sometimes, so their monthly meetings in our conference room as well.
We also work with Kim Bradley for the Great Ag Venture. So the Great Ag Venture brings about 1,200 fourth graders. It might be more than that. It might be close to 3,000.
I think if you add South Carolina, that's a big deal.
Yes. So basically what the Great Ag Venture is it serves fourth graders in both South County and North County once a year for this great big Ag Venture Day.
Paul and I usually volunteer to help during the day with different
local leaders, but all these fourth graders get to come and experience agriculture some for the first time. So they're working with people like Mighty Cat Mushroom, Hamburg Farms, Dale Evanson on tractors.
But these kids get to come and explore ag for a whole day at the Mid-State Fair and then at the Aurora Grande High School. So it's a pretty great way to get these kids involved. And a lot of time, these kids see ag for the first time and want to learn more. They want to go into 4-H and FFA. So I think that's a great opportunity for them.
There's a story about a young man up in Madeira who came up through the 4-H program.
Yes.
And now he's a major domo in the chicken raising business.
Who would have thought? And I guess he's done all kinds of high-tech stuff with solar and this and that and the whole thing. So he's kind of created a model chicken farm in the future or something.
Yeah, something else that Paul and I do is we spend a lot of time on campus, whether that be in high school leadership classes, focusing on FFA students, or whether that be on Cuesta College campus or Cal Poly campus.
Paul and I both frequent those campuses very often. Paul kind of talks more about the government affairs side of things and ag policy.
And then I'll go and talk to them about life after college, looking for careers, internships, joining our Young Farmers and Ranchers program here in San Luis,
which is a great opportunity for those who are 18 to 35 years old, involved in ag, maybe not involved in ag. We meet once a month. We actually have our meeting this evening at the Slow Food Bank at 6 p.m.,
so that'll be great. But it's a good way to connect for those who are graduated, I think. I know that so much happens on campus. There's so many groups and clubs on campus that our Slow Young Farmers and Ranchers group is a great way for those who have already graduated to still stay involved and get some mentorship.
Yeah, you know, again, I mean, I think a couple of years ago, I had a woman come on who was standing up a program. I think it was at Cuesta College. And I met her at a Cattlemen's Association meeting a couple of years ago. And I don't know. And I don't know how she ever did with that. But I mean, both Cuesta and
involved in that, both being from Cal Poly. I think it's really special to be able to go back and talk to those students about where I started. I mean, I feel like I wasn't in their seats too long ago, but it's super fun to go back and see them getting more involved as well.
Yeah, great. All right, anything else I'm forgetting before you have to get out of here?
I don't think so.
All right.
Well, there's anything else.
Thank you for your help and all that you do.
Yes, thank you for having us. Very, very appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Now I'm going to put Paul through the window.
Okay.
All right. We have two more votes for Bad Bunny. I cannot believe that Bad Bunny is winning. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We have three TVs playing, somebody says. No, I think we've got we have a vote for Turning Point, and we have and somebody who was straddling the line here between TPUSA and Bad Bunny. Boy, this is a close race. Anyway, thanks, Jesselyn, for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Barry.
All right, take care. All right, Paul, let's start here. And we're going to do big picture stuff first.
You bet.
How has agriculture policy changed under the Trump administration? And how's the ag community feeling about where we are today with the tariffs and all the, there's good things and bad things based on what I could find.
No, that's absolutely right. And there are a number of things that the Trump administration has done ahead. They seem to be more ready to provide some sort of emergency funding. The tariffs have not helped the ag economy, both from the standpoint that we see here locally that it has not helped the wine industry that's notably kind of a down slump.
Is that because of Canada primarily, that they're not taking our wine, or?
No, that doesn't help.
Yeah.
But now we're at a stage where we have overproduction of wine grapes. Combine that with the changing drinking habits of our country. And the younger generations, the Gen Z and the millennials, are not only drinking less, they're not drinking wine. And so there's, you know, it's just sort of this perfect storm.
Yeah.
But it's
a difficult time right now to be in the wine industry. The topping of the tariffs, I know that they're only 12% of what they produce is exported to Canada.
Really?
And, you know, that's gone, and that's a big number.
Yeah.
You're seeing a lot of downsizing, you're seeing a lot of vineyards come out of production. In that respect, it's
not really so much what the Trump administration is doing or not doing. The tariffs certainly have not helped, but there, you know, and it's not just in California, but nationwide,
the ag economy is in a bad space right now. And the last time we've seen something like this was in the 1980s. And,
the policymakers, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Congress, they reacted and they did some things that actually did make the numbers better. One thing that a lot of people are aware of is the CRP program, the Conservation Reserve Program.
They pay producers to take land out of production. And so it reduced the amount of production prices, stabilized or went up.
And so we're kind of at a stage where something is going to have to change. What those policy changes are, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But right now they're trying to
put band-aids on various things. They're providing support payments to soybean bills. They're trying to do that through different sectors of agriculture. The trouble California is mainly a specialty crop state. And specialty crops, which would be anything from vegetables to strawberries to wine grapes to, you know, lettuce and so on, they were excluded in recent price support or economic support bailout from the government. And so it is a tough situation right now.
In reading some, doing some research, and I know I buried you with all kinds of stuff I was reading, but again, I don't mean to say this as a negative, but the agriculture industry is really inextricably tied to subsidies. I mean, it goes back to the Great Depression, of course.
Absolutely.
And so for instance, the tariffs hurt the soybean farmers and so on and so forth. So they made $12 billion available, you know, for subsidies for those folks. They're pushing, the Trump administration is pushing the E85,
the fuel, right, the ethanol,
right.
So they're making money available for that. So which helps two very large commodities, neither of which are in California.
Yeah. And so, you know, and it's just what's happening is, you know, prices have stayed flat across all, with the exception of cattle,
ag sectors, but the input costs have continued to rise.
Right.
Cost of fuel, cost of equipment, cost of labor.
Right.
Those things continue to rise.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
it's going to be interesting to see how this
shakes out.
You bet.
Yeah, and I also noticed that they're trying to kind of reduce the SNAP program, which is supplemental nutrition, which is a big lobbying point for the agriculture community, right?
So they all go hand in hand. They do. And it also shows you where political power resides in ag. It's in the Midwest.
Absolutely. Okay, folks, we'll be back in a few minutes. The next thing we're going to talk about is environmental stuff that the Trump administration has done, and then we'll get into the water.
Perfect.
Talk to you later. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero. The best price and service on brakes, tires, small checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Doorbell camera footage of a masked man has been released following the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie from outside her Arizona home. Investigators hoping the public will recognize the suspect. They'll also analyze what the mystery man was wearing. Fox's Jonathan Hunt is in Tucson.
They'll break down the clothes. They'll look at the gloves. They'll look at the make of the backpack. They'll look at each store that might have those items in stock.
84-year-old first reported missing on February 1st.
Agents are being fitted with body cameras.
They have the same more than 3,000 ICE officers have cameras that are active in the field, with another 6,000 being deployed.
Acting ICE Director Todd Lyons testified today before the House Homeland Security Committee on Capitol Hill as Democrats demand better oversight of immigration officers. America is listening to Fox News.
Building out with your local owner and operator HR Block office. As local accountants retire, many taxpayers are left wondering where to turn. HR Block is ready when you need a trusted expert. With experienced tax professionals, your local HR Block delivers reliable help year after year, no matter how the tax laws change. You'll get knowledgeable service, clear pricing, and flexible options to file. So if your old tax preparer is stepping away, step confidently into tax season with H&R Block. Trusted expertise that's here to stay. Call your local H&R Block office today to make an appointment.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Paul Clark, Executive Director of the Clark County Farm Bureau. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. And again, I can see I'm losing steam on my poll about Bad Bunny and the TPUSA. So if you want to text, whether you, 1 for the Bad Bunny, 2 for TPUSA, or 3 for the the buffet line at Super Bowl, please feel free to vote. But I think TPUSA is winning here a little bit, so we'll see what happens. Interestingly, Paul, you know, we were just talking about how national policy doesn't necessarily impact California. But I could see the California, and again, in the California Bountiful magazine, the California delegation is pretty active in lobbying. Very. So what are the issues that California Farm Bureau is lobbying for that impacts our local farmers the most?
Probably first and foremost, labor reform.
Okay.
And then, you know, and California Farm Bureau at the national level also, you know, would love to see change in tariff policies, you know, a more uniform and sensible approach. But at the state level is, you know, especially for California level, is where we have our biggest
issues.
Fight.
Yeah,
and you know, we were talking on the break about how, yeah, EPA can lower certain standards, be it about pesticides or things like that, but California has its own model,
right? So to speak,
and it's a much tougher environment,
right?
In that respect,
yeah, yeah. Well, again, we're paying a premium for living in California, aren't we?
We certainly are, and you know, it's, I'm not sure how long people can afford to continue paying that
price. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure you're seeing a lot of farmers, you know, really struggling.
No, the bankruptcies are going up. You know, we're in the San Joaquin Valley. You're seeing dramatic decreases in land value, especially if that property does not have access to surface water and is reliant on groundwater. They're seeing anywhere from 20% to 50% drop in fair market value.
Mm-hmm.
And the ripple effect of that is, okay, there are a lot of lenders using that ground as collateral.
Right.
There, you have a lot of counties dependent on property tax revenue. And so it's... These are interesting times, to put
it
mildly.
Yeah, let's talk about a different topic again before we get to water, because it's on the hit parade here. We were talking last week about this half cent sales tax that SLOCOG wants to impose for roads. Basically, you want to unpack that issue and where you see that going, and especially how it might impact the Farm Bureau members.
Well, it's The SLOCOG initiative gets through the Board of Supervisors, and I believe it requires four votes to be put on the ballot. It has to pass by
66 2/3,
right,
plus one, and so when they ran it in 2016, every day it lost by 500 votes. And,
really.
So, and it was kind of a different structure then, but this, now they're saying that this is going to be absolutely restricted to road repair, maintenance, and so on, and it's going to be divided, the income coming from it, the revenue, will be divided into different sections of the county. It's,
right.
It's not divided up by supervisorial districts, but they have a grid that shows, and so most of
Supervisorial District 1
and Supervisorial District 5 are in one,
and they, you know, they show that piece,
right,
of the pie.
It's really a mix of who supports it and who doesn't.
A lot of home builders support it because it, right now, when you develop a subdivision, you're paying for all the road infrastructure and everything else.
Right.
And so home builders are supporting because that is a big addition to the cost of a house. So, you know, Farm Bureau in 2016, we supported it.
Hmm.
Now we're still kind of unpacking the details and the fine print, and I'm not sure how we'll come out.
there's a, what's interesting is there's a second effort that is being put together by a citizens committee. Now, if the citizens committee can get on the ballot with this, they do not need a 66% or 67% vote, you know, majority vote. They will pass with just 51%. And so that's, there are a lot of people with mixed feelings about that.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a concern that might threaten property taxes or might threaten, you know, all of a sudden
Prop 13.
Right. And so I don't think that's the case, because Prop 13, Prop 218, Prop 26 are all constitutional amendments. And so to change those, you have to amend the Constitution.
Right.
Which requires 66% of the voters. So, but even so, it's, you know, the principle of you need a supermajority to raise taxes, I think, should still be in play. And the Citizens Committee concept was challenged three different times in court. And the courts all ruled in favor of the Citizens Committee, because Prop 218 is written to say that if a government entity proposes to raise taxes or special taxes, then it has to pass by 66 2/3. If it's a, it does it, the proposition, the constitutional amendment is silent as to a Citizens Committee, which I,
and where did these Citizens Committees, where did that concept come from?
I really don't know the history of that, but it's, yeah, they figured out somewhere in the state, well, we're not a government agency, we're not a government entity, so let's put it on the ballot.
Right.
So it's, but that's the law right now.
Yeah. And so what does it take to get the Citizens Committee's initiative on the ballot?
They have to gather a lot of signatures before, I want to say their deadline is in May.
Okay. So is that in play right now? Is that moving along?
My understanding is it is.
And who's running that?
It's, well, it's a committee.
Yeah. a committee of whom? Exactly. Who's funding it? Is it, well, I guess, show me the money.
The funding, a lot of it's coming from builders.
Okay.
You know, I'm trying to think, you know, other groups. I really don't know, but it's definitely, you know, it's an issue that really, because you see the pros and cons of it.
Right.
And the other problem is that because California or San Luis Obispo County did not pass Measure J, we, according to SLOCOG, have missed out on upwards of $700 million in funds that could have been used to approve, to improve our roads, et cetera. And what's happened is the state of California, you know, if you pass this tax, you're known as a self-help county.
Right. I was going to ask you about that.
And so the state will only give, the state and feds will only give you this grant money for roads if you're a self-help county.
I see.
And so, because we are not, we, and SLOCOG says it's up to $700 million. What the proponents don't tell you is, considering California's current fiscal situation, that who knows what's...
Where's the money going to come from?
Where is it in the future?
So, right, right.
And then one last pro argument is that we get so much tourism in this county, a lot of these funds will be, you know, coming from the tourists, which,
yeah,
I don't, you know,
yeah,
but so that's the whole thing. And, you know, Farm Bureau has not taken a stand on it. We have people that support it in principle but do not support the 50% Citizens Committee route. We have people that oppose it outright just because it's another tax, and this is going to all go to bike lanes in San Luis Obispo.
Right.
And their attitude is, if San Luis Obispo wants a bike lane, let them pay for the damn thing. You know, and I'm not saying one side is right or wrong, but they're...
Oh, come on, Paul. I know. I know, you're a diplomat.
We can talk about it off the air, but no,
I don't want to see anything given for bike lanes anymore. I mean, nothing against bikes, people on bikes, but it's like enough already. We got road problems. A couple more things on taxes. Then there's going to be hopefully a Save Prop 13 initiative on the ballot. I think Howard Jarvis is behind that. And then there's a shot at potentially a California mileage tax, a ballot initiative on the ballot. So the taxes are coming fast and furious in the next election cycle, right?
They are. And I, you know, this is Paul speaking, not Farm Bureau, but I fully support anything that is going to protect Prop 13.
Right.
You know, we already pay the highest taxes, income taxes in the country, and we have absolutely nothing to show for it.
Right. One of the questions I have, and I want to get onto the water thing next because we're running out of time, but, you know, they talk about, what do they call it, a split role where businesses won't have the Prop 13 advantages of how it works. How does that impact the ag world? I mean, as far as property taxes, because part of their operations are a business and part of the operations are agricultural land, part might be homes. Does that whole split role thing impact the ag community?
I would have to see how they define a business versus an individual. Because a lot of people own their ranches, their farm ground, in their own personal names. Others own it in a corporation.
Right.
But the reality is, if you're running a ranch, if you're running a farm, you're running a business.
Right.
And so what is their defining,
Right.
The differential yes. there? And
more so, work for attorneys.
Yeah, thank God I don't do that.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's return to the saga of the Paso Robles groundwater sustainability basin, or whatever the heck it's called. I guess the two issues that I'm picking up on here are, number one, you know, the future of the JPA mm-hmm. after the failed 218 vote, and your thoughts on whether the JPA is going to get funding or they're going to run out of money and we're going to go back to the five... you know, GSAs. Okay, so that's one thing. And then there is something positive on the horizon as far as a fallowing program, which might be helpful to overall sustainability. So you want to take those two in that order and maybe unpack those two issues there?
You bet. So you're correct. Because the 218 vote failed, I believe the JPA has funding up until June or the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, they're going to have to figure out how do we fund. And so there are two options, roll out another 218 or do fund it through what's called a Prop 26 fee.
Right.
And so 218, after what happened on the last one, you know, there are two schools of thought. There are people who oppose anything other than a 218 because it looks like, really, at the end of the day, bad faith.
Right.
And so there's a big effort right now, and Steve Sinton is the one that initially spearheaded this, and it was, I thought, very constructive, is that he put together a committee in a room, not of people who are pro 218 or pro water, but they are people who are, they're not de minimis, they're farmers, they're, you know, many of, some of whom have been on this show or been on KPR
right.
a lot. And what is it, you know, what is it you don't trust and what do you not want to do with this JPA or anything like that? And it actually was very eye-opening and constructive. And by the end of the meeting, you know, there felt like maybe there's some consensus here.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is an effort to be doing that. So I think if, in fact, they decide to take a second run at a 218, there are going to be a few different things. One, it's going to be at a much lower amount.
Right.
Second, it's going to the board of the JPA is going to expand. There's, you know, it'll go from four to maybe seven, and you'll have someone who would represent, you know, the community at large, or most likely de minimis users, uh-huh. right? And then small agriculture, medium-sized, and then the rest of the JPA, or the different GSAs, you know, the board members from the various GSAs, the water districts or the county or the city of Paso Robles. And because the biggest thing, more than anything, is there is just this distrust in the process, the distrust in the people who are on the board.
Another government entity that's going to become a feeding trough for consultants and attorneys.
Well, it more or less is already.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, and I got to say that the way the JPA approached this first 218 and the way it was not well thought out.
No.
I thought it was very ham-handed. And it just, it did the opposite. Instead of building any kind of consensus, it just got people riled up.
Yeah.
It was too damned expensive. It looked like it was just there to favor the big grape, you know, the big vineyard operators, right. and everyone else to take it or leave it.
Right.
And so I get a sense, even from Bruce Gibson, you know, that let's try this differently. And so we'll see. It's going to play out one way or another.
Yep.
And you know, but here's the fact is Sigma's state law.
Right.
And we're going to have to comply. And there's arguments, well, we can do the very bare minimum and not have to worry about. And, you know, I think in your notes you asked, has the state ever taken over a water basin? And I believe they've taken one completely over. And then there have been a number of them put on probation, which is sort of this purgatory where all of a sudden everyone's paying a well fee, I believe $300 a well, and then the amount of water or the amount they have to pay per acre foot pulled. And so there's a better way to do this,
yeah.
and rather than play chicken with the state of California.
Well, no kidding. Real quickly, we might have to take some of this on the other side of the break. Tell us about the fallowing program, because that seems to have some general consensus of being a good thing.
It is. It should have happened a long time ago. It really is a response to the offset ordinance that was placed in play, I want to say 2012 or 13, before Sigma even came along. And the offset ordinance had the unintended effect of locking people into irrigating that probably didn't want to be irrigating because they did not want to lose their ability to irrigate.
Right.
And so the voluntary fallowing registry would allow people to take land out of irrigation, you know, if they decide they want a dry land farm or anything like that,
right.
they can, but they won't be penalized through this offset ordinance.
Okay.
And secondly, their Williamson Act contract will not
be impacted.
Yes, it will not come into question.
Okay. Well, we come back. My question on this is, how would people unfallow their land then?
That's a very good question.
And we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. And mountain lions. All right.
Mountain lions.
We'll be back in the next couple minutes, folks. So stand by for our last segment with Paul Clark.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages ending mixed, but the Dow finished higher and notched its seventh record close of the year. Investors are cautious as they await the delayed January jobs report, which will be released tomorrow morning. Tech was the worst performing sector, while consumer discretionary and utilities gained. Stocks losing steam after some Fed voters urged caution regarding interest rate cuts. And Target's new CEO, Michael Fiddelke, announcing a management shakeup with job cuts at distribution centers and district offices to redirect funding for its in-store staffing. Target reaffirmed its fourth quarter sales guidance and yearly earnings forecast, and its stock fell 2%. The Dow winners, Home Depot, Travelers, and Honeywell. The Dow decliners, Amgen, JP Morgan Chase, and IBM. The Dow up 52 points, the NASDAQ lower by 136, S&P 500 down 23. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us, and it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
We're here to help. At Peak Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peek Painting at peekpainting.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Paul Clark, Executive Director of the Slo County Farm Bureau. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. You can still vote one for Bad Bunny, two for TPUSA, or three for the buffet line. It looks like TPUSA's got it by a nose here, so unless we get any more votes, that'll be the vote. Next week's show will feature Rich Veruni, who is the general manager of the Allegretto Vineyard Resort. They are the largest employer, I believe, in North County for sure, and they've got a lot of really great job opportunities for career-minded young people and folks that just want to have a great job in the hospitality business. He's going to come on and talk about that. And then in the hour segment, we're going to have Rebecca Kosnick of the Atascadero School Board and Rosalind Hansen, who is the National Moms for Liberty Director of Development. And we're going to be talking about parental rights, AI, and internet policy in the schools, and that should be an interesting show. So, Paul, we were going to wrap up one thing on the fallowing, I think, or did we cover all that?
We haven't, and I'm embarrassed, Barry. I do not believe the.
How do you get back out of the fallowing program?
Yeah, that was the question. Because the fallowing program is voluntary. If a farmer decides I'm going to pull 50 acres of irrigated ground out of production, I'm going to register with the fallowing, the farmer can unregister it. And I believe that is all through the administration done by the county. There's the way you get in, there'll be a online, this application, you enter your a parcel, your assessor parcel number, and you declare, you know, what's coming out, what's staying in, or is it all coming out? Because you don't have to fallow an entire operation. You
right.
can say you run 200 acres of grapes and you want to take out 50. You can take out 50, fallow them, and then you know, maybe pull those grapes out, and then in 5 years plant new grapes and or something else.
Right.
And
okay.
And then you can go. So but you know, a lot of these details haven't been
and so what's the plan for working out these details and the hearings and then final implementation?
We're waiting on the administrator, Blaine Reilly.
Okay.
And so we will see it hopefully soon.
Okay. So this is going to come from the Board of Supervisors, basically.
They've already approved the concept. This passed unanimously last Tuesday. I was at the hearing, and as you say, there was, you know, even from, you know, folks you would call detractors of the whole JPA and everything, they spoke positively.
I thought we had a call there. So,
okay.
So good. Well, hopefully this will be something that everybody can agree to, and it'll do some good.
Well, it's the first actual constructive step of trying to reduce water usage
right.
in the basin. The
right.
first tangible step.
Yep. All right.
Up to now, it's all been about administration, cost, everything else. Here we have, Dana Merrill called it low-hanging fruit.
Right.
Meaning, this is easy. Why can't
right.
we do this?
Right.
And
looks like we got a question here.
Okay.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question? And be really quick here, please.
Hi, Paul. You know that this agency that they're trying to set up, or board, is very unpopular.
Okay.
And so how do you think you're going to change that?
Good question. Thanks.
That is what we're trying, or what the effort is right now. And a proposal is to have more diverse representation on the board itself. So it's going to go from 4 members to maybe 7.
Right.
And I think maybe 7 or more. I think that's a good step. And it's going to, at least the proposals I've heard about are, it's one board member is going to be community at large that doesn't necessarily have to be in production ag.
Right. We got another question here, Paul, real quick, because we're running out of time.
If the state did come in, do you think they'd just cut back those two agricultural districts or use 90% of the water?
Good question.
Well, I don't think the state would have an issue with the districts, but that is what happens when the state comes in. They cut back everyone's water.
They're kind of arbitrary.
And it doesn't, you know, you're not allowed to try to fix it yourself, you know, or bring in supplemental water or do other things, you know. So it's kind of the last resort.
Right.
But again, being in production agriculture and representing production agriculture, I'm not inclined to want to play chicken with the state.
All right. Real quick, we got like less than a minute here. Talk about mountain lions and what's going on with that.
Well, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, in their continued wisdom, wants to list the Central Coast and Southern mountain lion as threatened. And what that does is it reduces the ability to lower their numbers when they need to be. There are the group Center of Biodiversity or whatever, they have really pushed this, and so it's important for agriculture to get their voices heard to oppose this. deadline for comments is tomorrow. Go to CDFW's website.
All right. Yeah. So again, so this will just add to the wolf problem, and then we'll have more mountain lions too.
Yeah. I can't wait to bring in the grizzly bears.
No kidding. All right, folks. Thanks so much. It was a great show. Thank you, Paul, as always.
I
love talking about this stuff. I really learned so much from you and the cattlemen when they come in. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to Barry@blazingbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.